Hello and welcome to Club Kingsnake Web Radio. Today we have a real treat. We have Andy Partridge, one of the founding members of the band XTC. And for all of you that are youngsters out there, XTC started up in the late 70s, and they've basically been a studio band for the last 35 some odd years. Andy, how are you today?
I'll do. I quite like being called a founding member. I think of myself as one foot on Plymouth Rock there in a great big Quaker hat.
You've been doing this for quite some time now. Do you still remember some of that stuff from the first tour when you guys came over for Drums and Wires?
Actually, that wasn't our first tour. Our first tour was with Barry Andrews in 78. And actually, it may have been 77. No, it was 78, maybe. And we were really unknown, you know, playing small clubs. And most of the audience either laughed or left, or just their jaws dropped and they didn't quite know what to do with it, if you see what I mean. But I'm glad they laughed. The laughter was a good reaction, you know.
Where did you guys go on that tour?
It was really just venues around the East Coast. Sheesh, you're testing the old brain box now, and with me with a ZX Spectrum for a brain as well. Yeah, there was like gigs around New York area. There may have been something up in Boston. It was a pretty quick in and out kind of hit and search and destroy sort of mission, really.
Mm-hmm. You guys didn't do a whole lot of touring. I believe you toured right up to the Black Sea album and then basically stopped. You did some special stuff. Like, I remember you did that, the very first MTV Unplugged before it was an Unplugged.
Yeah, that was my idea. That's one thing I should be crucified for a start, is coming up with the Unplugged concept. No, we actually toured up until 82. I think the last thing we did was a European tour for English Settlement. Then we were supposed to come to the States. In fact, we did come to the States, but I was really wigging out because I was going through some rather bad withdrawal from 13 years of Valium addiction. So I was unhappy about being alive at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, nah, I think I'm going to stop this touring lark and just do the enjoyable stuff, which is, you know, writing and recording and operating the studio. I don't want to be wiggling around in front of people, you know, trying to impress people, saying adore me. I don't think I'm really built for that.
It's strange to go out and see some of the bands from that era these days. I've had an opportunity to see quite a few, like X and Henry Rollins, and there's some other bands out there that are revisiting the early 80s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every week there's you read the music papers, music magazines in England. Every week there's a band that comes out that gets compared to early us, you know?
Well, and let's talk about that. I mean, you guys have always been considered kind of a favorite band among musicians, and there are some bands that have come out in the near past that have had that same kind of acclaim, like Radiohead, certainly, and Coldplay, until they got to be big famous. Radiohead, you know, they stayed at a certain level. They never really broke like Coldplay did over here.
I can see why Coldplay broke, because they're kind of, you know, it's sort of inoffensive, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's like nice wallpaper or something. Yeah, we'll have a roll of that, you know. You can see why they went big.
They were kind of aimed towards the OC crowd, the Orange County crowd, I think.
Yeah, sure. I'm not a fan of Coldplay. I listen to very little what you'd call pop music, because it's a bit of a busman's holiday for me, you know. I kind of get most of it, my cravings for it, out of my own system, and so I catch myself not listening to or not buying records by what you'd call contemporaries now, you know. I find most of them are kind of rehashing of the early 80s in any case.
It's amazing. I had a disc the other day that was sent to me, and I listened to it, and I said, I heard all this before 25 years ago, and I really didn't care for it then when Adamant did it. And, you know,
yeah.
So it's amazing to see all of this stuff coming back up. But it's also amazing to see some of those bands that are out there that are still touring or that have never quit touring in that entire time frame.
Yeah, but don't you think that's kind of a bit gruesome?
Oh, God. The road takes a toll.
You know, it's like freak show stuff. Let's go and see how old they look this year, that kind of thing. I'm all for people touring and doing what they want to do, but I must admit, I think it's much more important to keep being productive and inventive. You know, if you're touring kind of greatest hits stuff or whatever, I think that's a little sad. And all these bands that are reforming just to sort of cash in on the kind of chicken in the basket cabaret circuit or whatever, I think that's all very sad. But I don't mind if bands are going to reform and then come up with some great new stuff. You know, there's absolutely... I'm not an ageist, you know. I mean, I'm getting on myself now, which is why the cynical muscle is has grown enormous with me, because I've been through all that stuff. I know what all that stuff's about, you know, and I don't get excited like a 17-year-old kid would, who's, you know, can go in a record shop and discover something for new now. The chances are I've probably heard it. So it gets tough, you know. It's a curse. You get wisdom, but you also get really cynical because you've been through all that stuff yourself.
Do you find that you're creative on your own, or do you have to force yourself to be creative?
It's a mixture of both of them. Sometimes you catch yourself thinking, "Oh, well, that's a great idea," and there's no way of knowing it's going to pop into your head. Or it's usually when your brain is tuned to nothing. You just letting your brain kind of do the automatic tuning on its own, and it's just scanning the ether, and then suddenly some message will come in, and whoa, yeah, that's a great idea, you know. There's that thing, or there's the thing where you just, you know, you sit down and you say, I'm going to squeeze something out if it kills me. And that also has results as well, but I finally recently got to do something which I've been wanting to do for a long, long time, which is an improvisational record with some other players. And one of those players is Barry Andrews on keyboards. And the other player is a drummer called Martin Barker. And we put ourselves in a recording studio, local recording studio, for 3 days. And we just... made a noise. We just said, look, we're not going to discuss keys, we're not going to discuss tempo, we're not going to rehearse, we're not going to organize anything. We're just going to turn the machine on and play, and whatever comes out is whatever comes out. And over 3 days we ended up with 8 hours of music, and no overdubs, no studio trickery or whatever. Everything you hear is what was coming off the floor. And we picked an hour and 20 minutes of those 8 hours that is pretty great stuff, I got to say. And I always wanted to do that, just never got around to it. And I've just finished it recently, so there's an album coming out. There's like at least one of my little dreams fulfilled. And it's called Monstrance, and it should be out... hopefully by the end of the year.
Okay. You've also got some other stuff coming out. The Fuzzy Warbles, 7 and 8? Is that correct?
7 and 8, the end of the series for now, are coming out. But, I also have this, what I was building to with the start of the series, in fact, with the whole series. The reason why they're make-believe stamps is because there's a box called the Fuzzy Warbles Collector's Album. And it's actually a box made to look like a 1950s kids stamp album. And then you open it up and you can store all your Fuzzy Warbles in there, like a stamp collection. And there's also a Trompe L'Oeil pack of stamp hinges. The stamp collectors out there, the nerds, will know what I'm talking about. And I'm one of them too. But yeah, you get like a fake pack of stamp hinges, which is actually another disc. And you get a little book in there where I write an essay about home recording. That's called Hit, Record, and Play. And you also get a sheet of Fuzzy Warble cover stamps. But it's a beautiful box. Everyone that's seen it goes, "Hey, I want one of those. That's great." So it was planned years ago to when the whole series of Fuzzy Warbles was issued, to actually put this kind of like fake stamp album out so you could keep them in that. You know, because I'm a real packaging whore. I love the whole...
Well, you're a collectible nut, correct? Don't you collect
oh, yeah,
little comic
yeah,
books?
Yeah. I'm typically English, you know, bad teeth, and I collect stuff.
Well, you're a big comic book fan, I believe.
Well, I was at one time, but what got me out of that, I was a real comic book nerd. I used to go to all the conventions, and I was big on kind of late 50s, early 60s Marvel and DC stuff. Had about 5,000 comics, roughly that. But on a tour of the States, the place where I was living in got mice. And I tell you, those little bastards, they can eat through Mylar bags. And I wasn't really storing the comics properly. And I had these fantastic, you know, like, really great examples of great Marvel, DC, and Gold Key, and Charlton, and all sorts of comics, you know. But the mice were eating through stacks of the Mylar bags as well. And of course, you know, they were ruining them. So it broke my heart, but I had to cut off the comic collecting limb. But I'm still kind of interested in comics. My son is an animator now, and he's really big on comics as well. So he's inherited that gene from me, I guess.
What's on this new Fuzzy Werbels 7 and 8?
What's on 7 and 8? Actually, there's a few things that I'm really, really proud of. There's a track called Two Rainbow Melt, which was a poem. I just sat and wrote a poem about a rainbow. And most of the spectacular ones are the kind of double ones, you know, the two rainbow thing. And I started to write these words of this poem, and I was really proud of the description. Lines like toucan still four can on cloud turning Kodak. I thought that was a really nice description of slow-mo explosion in circus paint store. I thought that was a great way of describing a rainbow. And I was really proud of this little poem about rainbows. And I thought, damn it, you know, this could be a great lyric. And I took myself to my garden shed studio, which is 12 by 8, and there's no room to swing a Stratocaster in there. But I improvised a track, and literally improvised, just grabbed the first melody that came into my head and made this thing work. And it's kind of like a slice of modern psychedelia or something. And that's probably about the best way of describing it. But I'm really proud of it because I'm really proud of the lyrics. I sweat blood over the lyrics. The music falls out. The music comes out of me like shit. I can't stop it. But the lyrics, I really sweat blood over because I want them to stand up. You know, they should be able to work if you read them on a page or if you quote them to people or if you sing them or whatever. I really have to make those lyrics work.
Speaking of lyrics and your songs, what was the inspiration for Dear God? That's got to be one of my favorite songs.
The inspiration for it was really that crappy line of kids' letters to God. There was a little book at some point, I think it was called Dear God, and they were kids' letters to God. And, you know, it was one of those, Dear God, why did you make my granny die, and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I guess I was wrestling with the last vestiges of the sort of belief that was beaten into me as a kid. And I wanted to address the subject in the song and say that I didn't believe in God, but I quite like the paradox of writing a letter to God saying you don't believe that they exist, so you can get a lot of your opinions out to a God, which, do you see the paradox of it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You're writing a letter to God. And it really helped me come to terms with their, I guess it's like seeing the body of the dead God. There is no God. So I guess that was in some way a kind of a musical full stop for me. That was working out my trials and tribulations that had hung around since I was a little kid. Because I really used to worry about religion as a kid. You know, I remember one day, I must have been about 8 or 9. No, I think I was a little younger than that, maybe 7 or 8. And one summer's day, I looked up in the clouds, and I must have been in a real kind of quandary or some sort of hysteria about religion, because I remember the clouds parting, and I saw like the whole Renaissance, God on the throne, the angels, the whole thing, you know. And so it used to wind me up as a kid. What was this whole God thing about? And that song was me trying to work it out. But it's such an enormous subject. You know, you could have made 10 concept albums about it and still not scratch the surface, because human belief is so tricky and deep and convulsive, you know.
You've had Sarah McLachlan covered Dear God. And
yeah, I tell you what, she did a better job of it than we did.
Well, she did. She did a great job. Primus has also covered your work. And here in Austin, we have a local band called the Dukes of Simpleton, and I'm sure that they're real happy that I mention them now, that are a tribute band to XTC. How do you feel when other musicians cover or play your work? How does that make you feel?
I'm flattered. I guess the closer they get it to the recorded thing, I'm more flattered, because that's like they've taken more care, more attention. You know, and I've plenty of tribute bands I get to see stuff they send me. You know, they send me films of gigs that they've done, or I get to see them, or they send me discs, and I'm thinking, wow, they're playing live stuff that we never even got to play live, you know, that are from the studio years. Mm-hmm. And they've learned this complex stuff and these complex arrangements, and they're playing it live. So hats off to a lot of these bands, because they're probably better musicians than any of us could ever be. I mean, we're not fantastic musicians, I have to say. We're somewhere on the middle of the scale, I'm guessing, you know. But, I mean, in fact, I was no musician at all to start with. I just had loads of idea and loads of drive, and music came later.
When you guys got your start, you started out with Virgin, and you went through a period of problems and difficulties with Virgin. And at one point, you were on strike, as it were, not doing any live stuff, not doing any recorded stuff. But that's pretty much all resolved now, hasn't it?
Yeah, the strike came about because we had a lousy deal with Virgin. I mean, legendarily lousy. And it's no exaggeration to say that despite selling millions of records over the years, we never saw a penny in record sales royalties from Virgin in 20 years of being on the label. And so we were like, you know, obviously upset about this. And it was a case of, look, fellas, we're never going to make any money on this label. We've got to get off of this label. And Dave Gregory said, well, why don't we do what other people do when they're unhappy with their jobs? And he said kind of half facetiously, I think, let's just go on strike. So I thought, great idea, let's go on strike. And we just downed plectrums and said to Virgin, we're not going to make any more records for you until you let us go. You just got to let us go, and that's the end. That's the only time that we're gonna make any more music. And we actually spent 5 years wrangling with them to get out, you know, in which time I was going through a lot of weird stuff, personal stuff like divorce and stuff like that. But I amassed a hell of a lot of songs in that time, and was coming to the States and wandering around New York and dropping by and visiting record labels and stuff, just saying, look, I'm two blocks away in a phone booth here. Can I come and see you and play you some demos? And I was really, you know, personally fishing around for a potential deal should Virgin eventually let us out. And I think we embarrassed Virgin so much after about 5 years that they eventually let us go. And then we could, you know, fish around a little bit more and be a little bit more careful about what deals we took on with labels.
What kind of impact is the web having on XTC music out there?
I don't know whether it's having an impact on the music. I mean, the music's going to be what it's going to be, whatever the technology is floating around. But it, certainly in terms of kind of having a virtual store, it's great because people can come to our virtual store. They can get stuff from us. They can download stuff. They can talk to each other in the virtual store. It's like having a virtual shop. But that's fantastic because we're not beholding to other people. I mean, it's no exaggeration to say that we make more money selling our own discs as a store than we make out of the few pennies we get from a Virgin royalty on the sale of an album. You know, we can make say £3 or whatever selling a disc, but I'm lucky if I make 3 pennies on the Virgin deal. So it's great. So we can actually help to redress the balance a bit. And damn it, if we have to be our own storekeepers, that's no problem. You know, I'll do that.
At least you get to count the money yourself.
We get to make some money, and people get to hear our music. And, and it's the same with the Ape site. I've got a little label called Ape.
Yeah, I was supposed to ask you what that what the APE stands for.
Andy Partridge Experiments, Andy Partridge Enterprises, Andy Partridge Ego, Andy Partridge Excreta. I don't know anything that E could stand for, but yeah, it's a conventional label, and I have other bands signed to it, and I try to treat the other bands ethically. They all have good deals. We all split everything. The cost of everything and the profit of everything, and people don't get ripped off. And sure, send me your stuff, and if I like it, we may be able to help each other out. But I have a few other artists on there at the moment. I have obviously have my own recordings and stuff, but I have a female singer and player from Canada called Veda Hilly, who I think is stunning. Just really unusual dream-like music. I have a band from Brighton in the UK called the Milk and Honey Band, and they make gloriously kind of sunshiny pop that's very addictive. And I got a disc with Peter Blegvad and myself working on the inspiration behind the Orpheus myth, and we're doing kind of music and recitation and sort of soundscapes and stuff with words. But I'm negotiating to take a couple more bands on at the moment, but I'm not going to tell you until it comes to fruition. Of course, Monstrance is going to be out on Ape as well.
There's been some rumors floated that you're working on some kind of collaboration with Robin Hitchcock.
Yeah, I was until recently. In fact, two things stopped that. Nothing to do with Robin. He was great. I was really enjoying it. But I had two events. One of them was I busted a tendon in my left-hand ring finger, and that is the finger that basically does most of the hard work for me when I'm playing the guitar, so I couldn't play the guitar. That's pretty much healed now, although it's not quite the same shape as it was before, but that's pretty much healed, and I'm just got a few complications with the pinky next to it, but hopefully that's nothing that some injections and a little bit of something won't cure. So that kind of stopped me playing with Robin, and then I couldn't even work with lyrics and stuff because I was in the studio with mixing the Monstrance album, and one of the engineers, like a real idiot, blasted the snare drum through my headphones at full volume, and I have rather awful tinnitus at the moment, you know, that kind of screaming, whistling sound mm-hmm. in your head. And it's no exaggeration to say that every day for the last few months I've been sitting in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, which is kind of like a diving bell, and I'm breathing pure oxygen under a couple of atmospheric pressures, like being about 25 feet under the sea, as an attempt to alleviate this tinnitus. So I've had a really eventful year. So it was no reason of Robin's that we stopped, but it was these two accidents that happened to me. And I was just thinking the other day, I should really call him again, and we should really strike up a friendship again, because it was very mm-hmm. productive.
There are a lot of treatments that are using those hyperbaric chambers. Obviously, I don't want to draw the comparison. Michael Jackson...
Yeah, I'm doing it so I can look more like Michael
exactly.
Jackson.
Exactly. Well, you know, his pop career is just so wonderful right now.
Yeah, the trouble is I've started fancying young boys. I don't know what the effect is with this hyperbaric oxygen. No, it's great. Hyperbaric oxygen is great for healing a lot of things quickly, because it squeezes oxygen under pressure into your hemoglobin, and the old oxygen goes wandering around your body going, great, what can we fix? You know, and... They're slowly fixing this tinnitus for me, so it's been really helpful.
Do you feel too old to shake your donkey up?
Arf, arf. Yes, but not too old to smash a small coyote against a brick wall. Is there anything behind this question, like am I too old to rock or that kind
of
thing?
No, I think it was somebody that submitted this question to me trying to relay the depth of his knowledge of your music.
Okay. Shake him warmly by the testicles from me.
Do you have any plans to play live or do any kind of touring at all soon?
No, not really. That's a young man's game. It really is. The best bands are probably between the age of 18 and 25, when you still want to be in a gang. And the best bands are the bands that really have the athletic energy to do that night after night for 70 nights on the trot. I think you'll find historically that all the great bands are great between those kind of points. Younger than that and they haven't got it together, older than that and there's too many other problems. It's very much like football. I think the best bands for playing live, because of the energy and the stamina and the plain athletic stupidity needed to do it, the best bands for playing live are like footballers. You start getting to 30 and your career as a footballer is finished. And it's really like that with so many bands. You don't want to be in a gang when you're kind of over 25. It kind of feels really stale and wrong, you know?
We've got the Rolling Stones playing here in Austin for the very first time ever.
Yeah, well, that's the freak show thing. That's like, yeah. You know, best go and see them. Like a living monument or something. It's like, let's go and see the Statue of Liberty because it's going to fall down one day. Let's go and see the Rolling Stones because they're going to fall down one day.
I'm afraid that there's a certain percentage of the audience that also goes to stock car races to see the crashes that are attending that show.
Oh, yeah,
because,
yeah, sure.
You know, if Mick moves the wrong way, he's going to blow out a hip or a knee joint.
I don't think the Rolling Stones have done anything good since about 1971. So, you know, I think they didn't do anything good once the drugs kicked in. That's all there is to it. Before they could afford the drugs, they were great songwriters.
When you guys started out, you were working with some great producers out there, Steve Lillywhite and Todd Rundgren and some other people. And now you're basically producing all your own music there. What was it like to work with those guys versus doing it all on your own?
I still like to work with producers. I don't like doing it all on my own because you can't tear your performing head off and put your analytical head on so quick. You're either performing or you're analyzing or you're setting up microphones and twiddling controls and stuff. You can't do all this stuff really well in one go. So I still like to rely on the expertise and the ears of other people. You know, if I've got my performing head on, to do it good in the studio, I have to say, look, how was that? Is that in tune? Is that good enough for... And they might say, well, yeah, the run-through was, you know, you had more fire in the previous run-through, so try and get that fire back in, but watch your tuning on the second verse there. Or, you know, you need somebody you can trust to tell you the truth and be difficult with you, to be cold and hard with you and say that was not good enough. Because when you're producing yourself, you let all sorts of crap through. So you got to watch that out. Watch out for that. And really, it's you hand the police, musical police reins over to someone else. Say, look, I'm going to have to trust you to tell me what's good and what's crap. So that's important. That's really important.
Do you have a particular favorite song or XTC album?
It'd probably be a Frankenstein's Monster between bits of Apple Venus, bits of Nonesuch, and bits of Skylarking. I think they're the best three, but I also like chunks of The Big Express and Oranges and Lemons and the Dukes of Stratosphere as well. I love those fellas. But I think if somebody held a gun to my head and they said just pick one album, I'd probably go for Apple Venus.
We don't hear much from the Dukes anymore. Any plans for anything with the Dukes?
Not with
the
Dukes, but I've a good mind to bring a few more ideas out of the cupboard that I always wanted to do, and because I like the idea of anonymous music. I don't like necessarily that music is tainted with association of famous people, if you see what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I like that you take it on its merit. It doesn't matter if the person making it has some fame or notoriety or if they've done something good before. Just take each thing on its merits. So I kind of like, I have a real soft spot for alter ego. It's just because I used to like comics, you see, the alter ego thing. I rather like the alter ego musician as well, where you don't know that they're And this is a very popular theme. You know, the Beach Boys did an album as Carl and the Passion. Frank Zappa did an album as Reuben and the Jet. Roy Wood, The Move, did an album as Eddie and the Falcons, I think they were called.
You're not going to come out on me and tell everybody you're a member of the Blue Man Group in your spare time, are you?
No. But, you know, it's a sort of thing where it's a common kind of thing for people to want to sort of explore what they liked when they were younger musically. And then when they grow up, they kind of think, hey, wait, I'm not in the sort of bands I used to like when I was a kid, so why don't I pretend to be one of those bands or that type of music that I liked when I was a kid? You know, loads of people do it. So the XTC doing the Dukes of Stratosphere is, you know, there's nothing kind of new or outrageous in that. I think you dig with a lot of bands, you'll see a lot of that going on.
Are there any musicians out there that you haven't worked with yet that you would like to work with?
Well, I had a bit of a fright last year because Brian Wilson's management rang up and said that Brian would like to write songs with you. And I thought, hey, that's fair enough. And then I started to call people up and say, look, you know, how did it go when so-and-so worked with Brian Wilson? Or, you know, you knew such-and-such a fella who worked with Brian Wilson. How did that go? And, you know, you hear some crazy stories and some weird stuff like, is he all there? Is he not all there? You know, and you hear little horror stories about stuff that happened to Sean, what's his name, the High Lammers man. Hagen, is it? And I thought, well, he could be interesting, you know. And they said he'll call you when he gets off of the tour that he's doing right now. So I, you know, 3 weeks went by and nothing happened. The tour finished, nothing. So he never called. So he either, what, hey, he forgot. He forgot where he lived. He forgot where his phone book was. Who knows? Maybe he just changed his mind. And maybe he'd forgot he'd said this the minute after he'd said it. But that was a kind of a scare. That would have been interesting, to say the least, because he was very, you know, very influential for me.
I know that some collaborations don't exactly work out as well as they might sound. I guess one of the more infamous ones would be the Ramones collaboration with Phil Spector.
Although I really liked they did Baby I Love You, right, with him?
Yeah.
I really like that version, actually. It doesn't sound like the Ramones, but it's just Joey's voice with that song. It sounds like a Ramones song,
mm-hmm.
You know, just the structure of it. But I really love that version of it. But yeah, that was never going to work. I think
pulling the gun on him in the studio was probably.
Oh, but I've heard these tales from all sorts of people. John Leckie, one of our producers in the early days, and the fellow that did all the Dukes records, mm-hmm. He said he was tape hopping for Phil Spector. He couldn't remember who the band were, unfortunately, but he said that an hour before Phil arrived, they had the studio darkened, all the lights went down, and he had two huge minders, one outside the door, one inside the door. They turned the air conditioning up full, so it was like a meat fridge in there, really freezing. And he arrived. The session wasn't going great with the band, and he was kind of, Phil Spector was getting a bit aerated with the band, and they weren't getting the take how he wanted it. And what he did is he pulled out this enormous great gun, pressed the talk back mic, got the band to look at him, and he showed them the gun and fired it up into the ceiling. Now, it wasn't really going to come off as very cool, because Phil had forgotten that he was on a wheeled chair. And with the force of firing the gun, of course, he shot backwards in this chair with casters on. And he also forgot he was on a podium, which was about a foot higher than the rest of the floor of the studio. And so he fired the gun up into the ceiling, shot backwards. The chair came off the podium. He came off the chair. He ended up base over apex, looking like a complete idiot. And, of course, the end product was the band were pissing themselves with laughter. Not really the intimidation kind of thing that he was hoping for there.
It's amazing some of the personalities that are involved with the industry when you get up into the upper levels. Some of the things that go on that the public doesn't really hear about or find out about. I really am out of questions at this point.
All right, well, I'm really out of answers.
Well, I really appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule and talking with us today.
No problem. As you can guess, once you start me talking, that's deadly.
Well, if you ever make it to Austin, Texas, I'll invite you out for the only good curry in town, and it's not really that great.
The only good curry in Texas.
Well, there's probably good curry somewhere, but I haven't found it yet.
No, all right. Well, if ever I get to Texas, I always enjoy it because I always get a really friendly sort of reception from everybody. So, and they seem to be very familiar with what I do. And there's a few places that things are great for us in the States. One of them is New York area. One is Boston, and the other area is Texas. Can't seem to go wrong in any of those three places. So, yeah, I may take you up on that.
Well, it's been really great talking with you. This has been Andy Partridge of XTC. He's got new albums coming out, the Fuzzy Warble 7 and 8. And what was the other one?
Well, there's the box. You can also get all the Fuzzy Warbles in a box set, the Fuzzy Warbles Collector's Album. And the improvised music disc is a double disc set. It's called Monstrum.
Okay. Well, I'm certainly going to go start looking for that Fuzzy Warbles box set because I really need to. I don't have any of the Fuzzy Warbles set at all yet.
Oh, so, you're in for a treat.
Yeah. I'm going to sit down and enjoy it. Andy Partridge from XTC. This is Jeff Berenger with Club Kingsnake saying goodbye. Everybody have a good evening.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.